Well, it is Wednesday, and it is just seconds after 5 p.m., time for American Net Radio. 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD is the station. I'm your host, Tom Ryan.
What are we talking about today?
Lucky me. Hey, who are you?
A stranger in the studio. Stranger danger.
That would be my lovely wife and co-host, Addie Morales Ryan, in case you're new. Are you new?
Not at all.
Well, of course, we always talk about albums on Wednesday. That's what we've been doing for decades now. And we've been working our way through. I mean, this is pretty incredible if you think about it. We started, well, I can say that we started in January of 1955. The truth of the matter is that we did it a little bit scrambled because when we started, we didn't start in 1955. That was me rethinking it and saying, you know, I really should have. So we went back and made up for all of that time. It took us a couple of years to fill in the gap to get us back up to where we originally started, which I believe was 1961 or something like that. I don't know why I chose that in the first place. Any longer. I can't remember. But long story short, we have now covered just about 500 albums doing this every Wednesday now for about a little bit over 10 years, you know, 50 weeks about in a year. And that's all we certainly how many we would normally have without holidays and that sort of thing. So, yeah, we've been doing this for 10 years now. And we've worked our way from the early years of 1955 to where we are up to now, which is September of 1977. That was 49 years ago. Now, I bring that up because when I think of the time span from September of 1977 to September of 2026, I think of that as, or, I don't know, I don't think of it as 49 years, although it obviously is. But if you were going to compare, say, September 1977 to September 2026, and then put that next to a comparison of September 1955 to September 1977, that would be crazy. And that's only 20 years or 22 years. Excuse me. So, yeah. So from 55 to here, we've covered 22 years. And what a long, strange trip this has been for these 22 years. From here on out, of course, things continue to change. But September 77 or the year 1977 is the year that things got really, really turned around. So this is the year that punk music really began to become popular. And in 1977, the general impression of punk music was that it was primal, unsophisticated, and rude. To qualify as a punk rocker, you spiked your hair, you decorated yourself with safety pins, you also knew less than five chords on the guitar. Mastery of the English language was optional, and disdain for high culture was required. So before that basic impression, though, even took root, the Talking Heads completely changed the rules. Or perhaps they were never really a punk band in the first place. The band was saddled with that label because it came from the same CBGB's talent pool that spawned the Ramones, Blondie, Patti Smith, the Dead Boys, and Television. But creatively speaking, they were quite apart from the pack. First of all, they weren't particularly loud. That in itself was unusual, but certainly the most unusual thing about Talking Heads was their lead singer, David Byrne. Byrne's stage presence was awkward to the point of distraction. I remember this distinctly. I had a musician friend who wondered aloud if he might be some type of an idiot savant. He asked me that. He goes, is there something wrong with that guy? Now, in retrospect, that seems incredibly naive and more than a little insulting. But such was the stratification of the music scene in 1977 that such an observation could actually be debated. What the Talking Heads offered, though, was a fresh perspective on musical observation. Byrne played the role of a complex interpreter of seemingly straightforward situations. His intelligence is tantamount, residing as subtext to the simple act of reading a book, making a decision, or feeling gratitude to your parents. These are not things that punk rockers would sing about. The band's rhythms stay relatively simple, with a live feel that puts much of the focus on Byrne's characterizations, which in itself is a brilliantly subtle means of manipulation. Byrne's fooled the audience into thinking that the whole shebang was actually quite ironic, but his songs were lyrically straightforward and free of even a trace of irony. While giving the appearance that he was acting, he conveyed some of the most sincere and honest works in the history of rock and roll. Now, after almost 50 years, Talking Head 77 still stands as a great album because it strips away artifice and it aims for something real. It is an anomaly because it is a punk rock album with roots in art rock. That makes it pretty special. So let's play the opening track and you'll see what I mean about about it being incredibly straightforward. When you first heard this song, it might have said, oh, it's got a little jaunty thing going on and it's got to be, they're being sarcastic. Throw that to the side. Listen to it for at face value. And I think you'll get the real essence of exactly what David Byrne was trying to convey. And if you followed Byrne's career, you know what I'm saying is true. This song is called Uh-Oh, Love Comes to Town.
Take my hand, believe in mystery.
one of the best things about this album and about being the debut album for Talking Heads is the fact that the music is incredibly straightforward, but so is the theme of the songs. David Byrne is practically like, he's almost like naked in terms of like putting himself out in public and being that vulnerable, saying the things that he's saying. He's not trying at all to be cool. In fact, I think that coolness doesn't even come near what his perspective is like. It is personality. He's really, I mean, they were essentially a very innocent, if not outright naive, band. They weren't incredibly talented musically, and they were working for a while trying to get to the point where they would feel confident enough to even be able to record an album. I mean, take me a few minutes to tell this part of their history, but the fact of the matter is that going all the way back to 1975, when they were just a trio, which is to say, this is before Jerry Harrison, the keyboard player, joined the band. So it was just Tina Weymouth on bass, Chris France on drums, and David Byrne playing guitar, writing just about all the material and singing. Now, they had apparently, they ended up playing at CBGB's, and some of the people at Columbia Records had heard about the scene that was going on, and they had gone down there, and they actually invited them to record a demo album. So that was a start. And then after that, Berserkly Records came along and asked them if they wanted to record a demo on Long Island. And they did that as well. So they had this material, but they were very uncertain about it. They did not feel at all that they were ready. They felt that they were like, that they had to get better by a long shot if they were going to try to make a record. So, although they did send the Columbia demo to Arista Records, but when they followed up, Arista's response was, we never got it. It was lost. So they were thinking that that was just them like shrugging them off. Seymour Stein, the guy who runs Sire Records, and he's the guy who was responsible, if you remember when we covered the Ramones, he signed them, really liked the band. He liked the fact that they were straightforward and simple. After all, he signed the Ramones, didn't he? So there's that much that they have in common, except that the Talking Heads definitely don't have that punk vibe that the Ramones did. So they didn't really know what to do, and they felt that they really weren't good enough as a three-piece anyway. They wanted to find another guitar player or another keyboard player. They ended up, of all people, like falling in with Lou Reed, who had seen them at CBGB's, and he invited them back to his apartment so that he could critique the band and tell them what he thought about their songs, you know, maybe which ones they could speed up or change this and that, that sort of stuff. And he had set them up with another label that said they were ready to sign them. So the band came back and they said, let's look over the contract. And they were told, under no circumstances do you sign with these people. They will keep 100% of the money. So the band, like, respectfully declined. They stayed friends with Lou Reed, but they weren't going to go that route. But then they got the phone number for Jerry Harrison, who was the keyboard player and guitar player as well for the Modern Lovers, for Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers. That's an album that we did cover about a few months back. And Jerry Harrison, they had broken up, and Jerry Harrison was feeling a little bit put off by the music business. He didn't really make much money at all with the Modern Lovers. He was going to go back to school, but the band was trying to convince him otherwise. So they said, listen, we're going to do a show up by you. He was in Boston. We'll come up to you, and we'll do a show. So they did, and it was a long time before they didn't think Jerry Harrison was even there for a while, but when he did show up, he was like, meh. You know, like he wasn't blown away by them, but he said that he'd be interested in staying in touch if they were able to get a recording deal. That's when he found out that Seymour Stein actually did offer the band a recording contract. And this brought Jerry Harrison back to say, I guess I am interested. and they had a four-piece band, and they went back into the studio, and that's essentially what we are listening to now, is the result of 2 years of them basically trying to have a sense of confidence in themselves. I guess that would mean that they maybe eventually ended up getting a new feeling. I'm saying that because that's the name of the next track on the album. More than anything, I think I consider this album to be like, it was like a breath of fresh air in 1977. Everybody was divided. I mean, I remember like all of my friends who had grown up listening to like the Allman Brothers and the Doobie Brothers and name the brothers, whatever brothers you wanted to name. And they were beginning, those bands were beginning to sound old and tired, but they were like a little hesitant to let go. Because the new stuff that was coming in, this punk, was so unsophisticated and so like different that it was impossible to make a move from, say, being a Southern rock fan to suddenly saying that you really are into all these bands that are playing at CBGB. It was like an about face. So there was this thing that was like tearing people in different directions. What was beautiful about the Talking Heads is that they really weren't part of that. They were just sort of wonderful. They were simple. And I guess that the people who were like listening to those brother bands that I'm talking about would be able to mock them for being, you know, less adroit with their instrumentation and such. But they would have to, I think anyway, be impressed by the way that the band carried themselves and the fact that they were, although they were being very simple and their straightforwardness was just so off-putting. Like, wow. It was kind of hard to not genuinely like them. And I'm just going to keep playing the songs as we go through it. Next one up is one of my favorite songs on the album. It's called Tentative Decisions.
Now that I can release my tension, let me make clear my best intention. Girls ask, can I define decision? Boys ask, can I describe their function? And it's a hard logic to follow, and the girls get lost, and the boys say they're concerned that they are concerned with decisiveness.
A lot of ways that song conveys exactly what David Byrne in particular is trying to say about the album. The album does have an overall message to it, which he says it was to convey a modern message about the importance of taking charge of your own life. And if you listen, you'll say, oh, that's pretty much what all of these songs are about him coming to terms with the fact that he is growing into adulthood and that he does have to take the reins, so to speak, and not let other people tell him what to do. So taking that into the, like, right down to what's happening in the studio, he goes into the studio and he's very serious-minded about what he's going to do because he wants to be in charge of what he's doing, because after all, that's what the theme of his music is about. So he writes songs about being in charge of his own music, and then he takes charge of his own music, and then when it gets all recorded, the songs are all songs about taking care of your own life. Take charge. After they got down all the basic tracks, they ended up taking a break and going to London to do a recording. And that's when they were there. They met John Cale, Brian Eno, and Chris Thomas. Linda Stein was there as well, who was the wife of Seymour Stein, who owns Sire Records. And she was also the manager of the Ramones, or co-manager of the Ramones. So they all got together, and all of them were like arguing over about who could actually be doing like the production for the for their album. But David Byrne was saying, look, you know, this guy that we've got, Tony Bon Jovi, we don't like him, but we got him, so we're going to stick with him. The fact is, Bon Jovi was being nasty. He was insulting the band left and right. He was like just being difficult. It turns out that it was the engineer who was doing most of the producing and making it easy for the band to get work done. And most of that happened when the producers weren't even there. The band would try to show up with just the engineer to get the job done. And that's more or less what did happen. All right, we'll play two songs back to back. I will play Happy Day, and we'll let that segue into Who Is It?
Yeah. What is it? What is it? What is it?
I'm going to like put together two songs real quick to go from side A to side B to make sure that I can cover all these tracks. Next up is No Compassion, and we'll let that segue into another one of my favorites called The Book I Read.
Don't want to.
enjoyed it.
Decisions are a way of life. Other people's problems, they overwhelm my mind. They say compassion is a virtue, but I don't have the time.
Here we go again.
A bit late, I'm sorry to say, but I should have mentioned a few minutes ago that you're listening to 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD in Garden City, New York. The show is American Radio, and Heidi and I are covering the album Talking Heads 77. God, 49 years ago, and I would say it doesn't sound it at all, except this next track we're about to play is called Don't Worry About the Government. So keep in mind that when they wrote this song, Jimmy Carter was president. Just saying, you know, take that as you find it. And we'll let that segue into First Week Last Week, Carefree.
Move to last.
First week, last week, carefree. Okay, we got two songs left to cover. I'll play them back to back so we can get them in. It's time for the hit single, which I'm sure the whole world knows, Psycho Killer. I mentioned that they had problems with their producer at first, Tony Bongiovi. He was sort of like mocking the band at times. And when David Byrne was coming in to sing the song, he didn't like the way he was singing it. He wanted him to sound more psychotic. So he goes into the kitchen and he gets a knife and he hands it to him and says, here, get into the part, get into the part, get into character, carry the knife. And Byrne just looks at him and says, no, that's not going to work. So you can only imagine that going down. Coincidentally, when this song came out, it was released during the whole serial killings of the Son of Sam thing in New York City. So it was an inadvertent way to make it popular. We'll segue that into the closing track of the album called Pulled Up. And hey, come join us on Friday if you have a chance. So we're going to be covering the life and music of Billie Holiday for a while on Fridays at 5 p.m. So join us. Take care, folks. See you then.
I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep cause my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run away. Oh, psycho killer. Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run away. Oh, oh. You start a conversation, you can't even finish it. You're talking a lot. You're not saying anything. When I have nothing to say, my lips are sealed. Say something once, why say it again? Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run away. Oh, oh, oh. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run away. We'll be right back.
Daddy, come and look at me now. I'm a big man in a great big town. Years ago, who would believe it's true? Goes to show what a little faith can do. I was complaining, I was down in the dumps. I felt so strong, I thought you pulled me up. You